Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Retirement Village Industry Valuations. I'd like to introduce Dennis Barton. He's a Fellow of the Institute and a Senior Fellow of the Financial Services Institute of Australia. Since 1980, he has been a sole practitioner consulting actuary in Perth, working in a range of practice areas and conducting a personal financial planning practice. He's been involved in the valuation of retirement villages since 1983 and spoke at the first national conference of the Retirement Funded Housing for Ageing in October of 1986. So he's been around in the industry for some time. He has valued villages in all states of Australia and New Zealand. It's a relatively new area, perhaps, for actuaries' involvement. And so Dennis's presentation will give you a little bit of history around that. And he's an opportunity to ask questions after that. Can you please introduce, welcome, Dennis Barton.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Joanne. The title of this session is Opportunities for Actuarial Improvement. While we're going through, I'd like to keep in the back of your mind is the question opportunities for actuaries to improve the retirement village industry, or is it the opportunity of the retirement village industry to improve the actuarial profession, and make your own judgment perhaps at the end of that. We're going to be covering quite a lot in a relatively short time. The details are available in the paper, and the PowerPoint presentation is also apparently available. That gentleman whose photograph you can see there is a gentleman called Sir Keith Wilson. He was the MHR for the South Australian seat of Sturt in the 1950s, and he talked the wife of Prime Minister Bob Menzies into providing a dollar or pound for pound, as it then was, capital subsidy to the promoters of retirement housing, and also talked them into providing various sorts of recurrent assistance for those people too. In 1974, the capital subsidy finished, and then in 1976, the first private sector, as distinct from church and charitable or government, retirement village was opened in Victoria. It was the Australian Retirement Communities and is now so a part of the Stockland Group. In 1978, Tony Baldwin in New South Wales established Bayview Gardens Village, which subsequently became part of Capita Villages, which, when Capita disappeared, split back into Baldwin Care and became part of the Lendlease, and the remainder became part of the Lendlease operation. South Australia, the Cooperative Building Society was an early mover. That became Prime Life, became Babcock Brown, became Lendlease. And in Western Australia, St Ives was one of the earlier movers, along with Capita Villages, and St Ives is now moving to part ownership by the RAC of WA. The market that we have... for retirement villages is essentially anybody who's over the age of 55. But realistically, the subset we're looking at is the people who are between 65 and 84, who are in good health and who own their own home. The industry's penetration of that target market is around about 6%, with 120,000 units throughout Australia. The subset target market that we're talking about is the subject for the chart. It's now 11.2% of the population, and by 2039, it will be 17.9% of the population. So it's a growing market and a fairly low penetration. The product that the market offers is firstly defined by its tenure. Retirement villages can be, residents can hold a strata title, they can hold a company title, or they can hold their unit on a lease. Generally, the latter is the case. leaseholds are the predominant sort of title for the residents to own their village, their units. The contract that binds the manager and the resident has two or three components. The first one is recurrent expenditure, and the recurrent expenditure from the actuary's point of view, provided it is covered, can be discarded. If there is enough money coming in and enough money going out to fund the recurrent arrangements of the village, that's fine, the actuaries can forget about that. If there's not, then the actuaries have to be concerned, and the managers have to be concerned, because one of the issues about retirement villages is whatever is set in the initial documentation binds the manager well into the future, as they do in all contracts, but it's very hard to change. The main thing from an actuarial point of view is the capital transaction that goes on with the retirement village. And what happens there is that payments are made to and from the manager of the village at the time the unit is vacated. The payments can depend on the duration of occupancy, and they can be related to the purchase price as the person or couple went in, or they can be related to the reallocation price paid by the new ingoing resident. Other care levels may or may not be promised. We are essentially talking about independent living units here, which are people in normal health, don't need any care at all. With the retirement village operators do operate the next level up serviced apartments, which have people who are not ill enough to have government funded aged care, but need some care. So you may find a manager offers concessional transfer up to the serviced apartment level, so you need to make sure, if that's in a contract, you need to have a look at it. The quality of the product, what you see on the screen is some of the early product, around about 1950 that one came from, I think. There's a general rule of thumb that you can apply to the quality of retirement villages and the size of retirement villages is that once they're decayed, they get another bedroom. So that one would have been a bedsitter. In 1960 and 1970, you might have got a full bedroom. Next decade, you've got two bedrooms. And now you have a situation where the best of the retirement village houses are simply cluster houses restricted to the people of the target age group. Unrecognisable, indistinguishable from conventional housing. The people who are participating in the industry, the developers, of course, they drifted into care from developing real estate, and many years ago I sat in the conference of the Retirement Villages Industry Association, or Retirement Villages Association, and I had on one side, I can't remember left or right, depends facing you and me, was a person in the uniform of the Salvation Army, and the other side we had somebody in the uniform of the property developers, which for those who are old enough to know is white shoes. So it brought these people together in the industry, and I think some developers got a little bit ambushed by the responsibilities of care that they gradually found themselves wearing. The larger private groups, such as I mentioned Australian Retirement Communities and Baldwin Care Group, the St Ives Group in Western Australia, and definitely Co-op Retirement Services in South Australia, they, by the time their heyday had passed, to the extent it has already, they had multiple sites. They were big private businesses, but they tended not to be public companies at that stage. Church and charitables have been in the industry at the charitable level forever, virtually, but a lot of them now have a for-profit resident-funded component. And some of those, the charitables, have demutualised, and they, together with some sales by the private developers into the corporates, have got to a situation where there are 10 corporates controlling a quarter of the market, and one of those corporates controls 10% of the market. So the industry over perhaps the last decade, has gone from something which was essentially private sector and church and charitables to the public, to the listed sector, the area which is the area of interest largely to our profession. Nothing's happened. As is always the case, we're bound by legislation. The Retirement Villages Act in each state is, as I say, a state act, but it is not administered by the Minister for Housing. It is not administered by the Minister for Seniors' Interests. It is administered in all cases by the Minister for Consumer Protection. It is very much consumer protection legislation, and it is very prescriptive. In the paper there's a list of what the current acts and the most recent changes, New South Wales shortly to make some significant changes. You always have to worry about taxation. In this industry there are two watersheds, if you like, 1994 tax ruling and the 2002 replacement draft ruling, which remains a draft. The income, the tax treatment of those is set up there, essentially you can take your notes on that. The GST tax is leaseholds, being the most common area, more common sort of tenure, are input taxed. So GST is largely forgettable in this area. So that's where we are with tax. With accounting, potentially there are three places where you could look. You could look at and say that retirement villages as financial assets and liabilities fit under accounting standards 7.132 and 139. But the way the auditors have acted is to say that any receipts can be discounted and any obligations, liabilities, can't be discounted. The idea being that in theory, all the villages, all the residents could walk out of the village tomorrow. Now, our villages are getting a little bit better now. You can see we've got some colour on the pictures. We're now moving into the actuarial area. There's a couple of things that everyone in this room knows, but are probably not completely common. The use of multiple decrement tables and the existence of last survivors. That's stock standard actuarial stuff. The significant differences between stock standard actuarial and retirement villages, if you could grace them with the title significant, is you have the issue of perpetuity. People move into a unit and stay until the last survivor passes away or moves out, and then that unit is available for resale to the next person. And so you have this perpetuity issue, which is not seen in other aspects of actuarial work, but it's not difficult. Two ways to deal with this. You can either allow for a reversion of a vacant unit as an asset which is coming when the unit is vacated, or you can have a model which basically takes everything out into the future, and whenever a unit is vacated you pop another unit in. I use the what I call a total value factor, which is the present value of the cash flow divided by 1 minus an increasing assurance. I do that because partly I started these with less computing power than one has now, and also because I find that total value factor is a useful measure which you can use to encapsulate the demographic assumptions you make, the financial assumptions you make, and the contractual arrangements that exist in the village. The other area which is a little bit new to actuaries, a little bit different to actuaries, and again not a huge difference, is in superannuation, for example, you know that you can measure salary changes from year to year to year on person to person to person. In retirement villages, a unit may be bought in 2003, sold this year, and resold in 2020. So we don't have this comparable sales going through. What you do have is the Case-Shiller index, which is used in the United States to produce a better measure of housing prices than our Real Estate Institute median prices. So you can use the Case-Shiller index, which essentially gives you a, through a least squares process, gives you an index of the logarithm, or gives you the logarithm of the index. Once you've done that, everything else is familiar to actuaries. And as I say, a lot of this is very marginal step out from traditional actuarial work. Another politician, Richard Cleaver, the late Richard Cleaver. Oh, incidentally, Sir Keith Wilson, if you didn't know, he's the late Sir Keith Wilson now, because we're talking about him in 1954. The Richard Cleaver followed Wilson's footsteps a little bit later and established a major swan village of care in Western Australia, and it's from his book that I've taken most of the photos. The current practice with valuation of retirement villages, the first question, the who tends to be members of the Australian Property Institution, the Institute, the sworn valuers. The practice of valuation sometimes uses global exit rates. Everybody, a retirement village turns over in 7 years, therefore we're going to, everybody gets rolled over in 7 years. The more, slightly more sophisticated of them pick up on the Australian life tables and they say, well, the people are aged whatever, therefore they're all going to move out in whatever number of years. I've not seen anywhere where there's been any attempt made to identify the voluntary versus involuntary exits. People leave voluntarily because they don't like the place, they want to be closer to family, they don't like their next door neighbour, and they leave involuntarily because they die or because they have to move to another level of care. They are two different sorts of exits and need to be kept separate in your mind as you're building up your experience. The treatment of last survivors in current practice is naive. What typically happens is they'll say, well, she lives longer than he, so we'll take her life expectancy, and that's the life expectancy of the village. Now, everyone in this room knows that that's not the way to find out when the last survivor is going to leave the village. The other aspect of current practice is that a lot of valuations work on term certain. So all the units are going to be rolled over at 7 years, 8 years or whatever. And that is not true, as we know, and can cause problems. If we were starting again to have an ideal process for valuing a retirement village, or the manager's interest in a retirement village, the first thing we would do is we would look at and understand the contracts, and these headings here are also headings that would be the headings of a professional standard or the headings of your report. You'd look and understand the contracts, you'd examine the entry experience, you'd examine the exit experience, you'd examine the experience of growth in values, you'd set some assumptions, and then you would do some calculations. Because of the fact that you have the payments made are dependent on duration and there's a lot of last survivors in there, it's very difficult to use any sort of aggregation calculations, even if you wanted to. Now, of course, you don't have to. You have a projection of individuals. What I find is the best way to do it is simply to have a spreadsheet and you pick out the pick an individual occupancy out, project that occupancy, and then take the results of that under macro and store them up and keep on doing it. So you can't do anything like the older ones in the room might have done with life offices. But, again, not difficulty. So you do the individual calculations, And then the next thing you do is you do a sensitivity analysis, and the next thing you do is you'd reconcile the results of this valuation to what you knew happened since you did the last valuation. Now, when you look at that list, it's not a lot different, if at all, from what you see in other areas of actuarial endeavour. Experience. This experience that is here and a little bit more detail in the paper is based on 5,000 person years over 15 years from three managers. There were about 700 new occupants, new entrants, as distinct from new residences, in the sample. Top chart is, I think, visible to you. Basically, it's an age, sex, conjugal distribution, and looks nothing really surprising in that. The lower chart is simply the proportions of the three groups that you're concerned about: single females, single males, and couples. And there's no significant difference across the managers or across time in those proportions. One manager, however, has got significantly older single females and significantly older coupled male entrants. All managers have seen a rising trend in the ages with time, statistically significant globally, and in many of the three subgroups for many of the managers. So the proportions of males, single females and couples, pretty much steady, but the age is going up is what you can draw from that. The exit distribution. I've mentioned the difference between voluntary and involuntary exits, and the chart that I'm showing there, a little bit cluttered, and partly that's my peer reviewer asked me to put another couple of lines on it, is the trend line of female deaths expressed as a proportion of Australian life tables that existed at the time of the exposure. Situation there is that deaths are declining in that as that proportion, but when you bring the involuntary, deaths when you bring in other involuntary exits, you get a continuation of it going down. But then when you bring the other involuntary exits in, you get the reverse effect happening. So what's happening is people are dying less in the village, but they are leaving the village to go into care. So overall, there's no real downward trend in exits, voluntary, involuntary exits as a proportion of Australian life tables. Voluntary exits, there's some evidence in the stuff that I've looked at that there's a decrease with duration for one manager. The others seem to be fairly steady. But there are significant differences in the voluntary exit rates across managers. One of the managers in my sample had 50% of exits were voluntary. The other had roughly a quarter, and the third had 10%. Now, you need to be a bit careful about definitions, because sometimes what's recorded as a voluntary exit may in fact be a transfer to care and the manager hasn't picked it up. But the history of an individual site is obviously needs to be considered carefully. The final aspect of experience is the growth in values. The chart there's got the CPI is the red dotted line, and CPI plus 2.5% is the blue dotted line, and the purple line matching that fairly closely is the actual Case-Shiller index for one of the managers, and you'll find that they all look similar. You'll typically get 1.5% to 2.5% above CPI growth, and you will rarely get less than CPI, and you'll also rarely, in the long term, get much more than CPI, despite the fact that managers will tell you that it's going, that their growth has been spectacular. You rarely see that. But so that's 1.5%, 2.5%. The practicalities of valuation, I've already commented on the difficulties with commutation columns, and I've explained the way that I find it's useful to do. You look at the payments for each year, probability, present value, weight the three together, and that's actuarial science 101 again. The assumptions that I've used in the rest of the paper, and in the absence of anything else, are probably useful assumptions for any of you who get exposed to retirement villages. Entries, essentially half are single, half of the residencies rather than residents are single females aged 76, or age is spread around 76 as you and I know. About 1 in 10 are single males, just a little bit older, and the balance are couples around the same age again. Involuntary exits, females, about 30% of Australian life tables, quite light for death, and for other exits about another third. So overall, quite a lot less than Australian life tables. So there's a little bit of a problem if you're just dragging your exit rates out of Australian life tables. Males, you can see them there, more deaths, but still in total less than Australian life tables. Voluntary exits, I've assumed uniformly 1.9% per annum. And value growth, there's a typo which I hadn't picked up, it's CPI, it's CPI plus 1.5, which implies 5% per annum. And if you it's CPI plus 2.5. The discount rate that I've used in this is 10%, and I've taken that from at the time of writing, based on a range between 4 and 8% above long-term bonds, depending on the quality of the village. The contract that I've looked at is has got a DMF, deferred management fee of 4%, of reallocation price up to 7 years and thereafter nothing, 5% of reallocation to refurbish, and 0.25% reallocation on maintenance. Some of the insights that I can give, if I can call them insights, they seem very trivial, and if they seem trivial to you, that's a measure of the need for actuarial involvement in this industry. First insight, exits have a distribution, not a number. What you've got there is a distribution of exits and the expectancy of various people. Actuaries know this, but not everybody else in the industry knows it. The second insight is the consequences of there being a distribution, or these distributions happening. What's there? The red line is the value of a unit, or manager's interest, if the unit turned over every time at the term certain. The dots there are allowing for the distribution arrangements for people coming in at the average ages of each of the groups. So what you can see in the weighted average entrant is sitting substantially below the term certain price. And what that's saying is if you use term certains, you are overvaluing the manager's interests. An insight that an actuary can get, that's the present value of payments for people leaving at 1, 2, 3 and so many years. Obviously, you want to have your turnovers occurring as close as possible to the peak, and that paradoxically sometimes means you'd rather have a partnered female with an older male than you would have a single female. That leads on to something that actuaries can do for managers of villages, which probably other professions can't. You can use this total value factor as a target in determining your targeting for your sales market. Best to target people with, if we go back to the previous chart, an expectation 8 to 10 years of occupancy. So what we're saying there is the total value factor for for couples of various ages. So you can actually say to the client, look, if you target these people, you'll create much more value than you will if you target people down on the bottom left. Realistically, of course, you're only going to be targeting people that up on the diagonal, because you don't find couples, well, sometimes you do, I suppose, but mostly you find couples of similar ages. You can then take that insight a little bit further, and if you wanted, you could sell your units or price your units by age to individual potential customers. They tend not to do that because they don't like having somebody know that the prices of the units have fallen, or that Mrs. Jones got in at less than Mrs. Smith. Sensitivity analysis, just quickly ran through sensitivity to changes in discount rates, growth rates, exit rates, and couples, showing the sensitivity to the total value factor. Second sensitivity is growth rates and discount rates. Because this particular contract is based essentially on a real discount rate, because we're talking reallocation price, not purchase price, you get the same total value factor for the same real earning rate or real discount rate. This is not intended to be visible to you, but intended to indicate that it's possible to quickly get a sense of how the expectancy and partly therefore the total value factor moves with changes in the assumptions. Effectively, roughly a 3-year increase in entry ages will offset a 20% reduction in exit rates. Just an indication that actuaries can do these things quite easily for clients. The fifth insight is that the cash flow of a retirement village is best used for capital valuations, not for annual budgets. In the paper there's an example, again, that's something that actuaries know all about. If you had 200 single people, you might expect 10 exits, but there's a 20% probability of 7 or fewer. So actuaries know this, actuaries know about distributions, and actuaries are able to convey that to managers. The second last slide is, wish we had done this sooner. Every time I visit a retirement village, and I don't visit all that I work on, but I do visit some of them when they have an official opening or something else happens. And the manager always rolls out the resi. A resident is a resi. And they say, we wish we'd made the move here sooner. What I'm wondering is whether that's a valid statement for our profession as well as it is for those people. We, as a profession, have clearly lost some ground to the real estate valuers, perhaps because the small operators were unaware of us, or perhaps because we were too expensive. But we are people who understand demography. We understand distributions, like no other players in the industry. And the industry is concentrating now around the major operators who, at the big end of town, are the traditional client base of the actuarial profession. So I think there are opportunities for the actuarial profession to improve the industry. In fact, I'm convinced of that. And I think there may well be opportunities for the retirement villages industry to contribute something in the way of additional work for the actuarial profession. Thanks for your attention.
Now's the time for questions. But prior to that, can I remind you that would you please state your name and also speak from the microphone? There is a roving mic here, and there's also one in the middle of the room. Perhaps I can kick off with a question, Dennis. From your point of view, there's clearly a couple of key concerns that you have in terms of the misestimation of either under or overestimation of the values. What do you think they are, and what type of can you quantify those in terms of a percentage perhaps, so that we can have some idea about what's material and what's not?
The example that we showed up there of the term certain present value versus the present value for individual for the weighted new entrant was about a 30% overstatement. Now, that is a function partly of the contractual arrangement that I've assumed, but you can still get significant overvaluation by making the mistakes that I've highlighted that people have made.
Questions from
the board? Yes, most of these institutions tend to carry significant debt, don't they? Because they've sort of bought a block of land and built a whole lot of units and sort of trying to...
Sorry, Mark Berry, just starting out. Most of these institutions that you'd be working for here, do they tend to carry like significant debt because they've sort of bought land, built buildings, and they're trying to sell those buildings out, so they're sort of always sort of cash flow negative? That'd be the case.
Yeah, that would be the case, particularly with the corporates, but sometimes also the church and charitables will borrow too. But our concern is not so much the management of the villages, but the valuation side of it. But you are right, yeah.
Because right. Do you ever get involved in the debt management side of the business or helping them on that?
No.
Bruce Thompson. My experience is that I have been retired compulsorily after 12 years' service as the director of a retirement village, so my comments are probably going to come from the specific towards the general. I've not done formal valuations of other villages, for example, and I'm rather pleased that somebody has been doing such things. My experience, well, I was appointed because Alf Pollard wrote a paper on retirement village financing back in 1980-something early, I think, and some people who knew that I was an actuary decided, quite correctly, I think, that it was cheaper to employ me as a director rather than to pay me as an actuary. My experience when I then started to talk to other villages in the networks was that their experience was very different to mine. That even with a village of 100 people, their demography, 100 people in similar areas of Sydney, that their demography was quite different to mine. That no matter how many assumptions I tried to make, they would always surprise me. There was always surprise exits because ladies remarried and went back into the community, or people lived to 100, and it was pointed out to me that my model didn't allow for people to live to 100, and still be in self-care at 100, and still to... no matter what assumptions I made, I found that self-selection was incredibly powerful, that they self-selected entry and they self-selected in not exiting, even when everybody thought they should exit, that they were no longer suitable for self-care, that they would demonstrate to the local ACAT team that they, in fact, could still drive a car at the age of 100. And somebody was given the keys on his 100th birthday to drive around the car park, and they put some barriers out and everybody hid. and he drove around the cones quite satisfactorily. and then down the driveway and off to the shops. And he hadn't driven for 20 years and didn't have a license, etc., etc. They will always surprise you. Real estate agents, I have found, have been completely incapable of selling a retirement village unit. They don't understand anything other than a purchase of something or other or the rent. When you have something where there's a payment up front and ongoing payments and you get something back at the end depending upon a formula, we've not found any agents who could cope with that. And so, oh, and one other thing I wanted to mention was you had a rule of thumb, which I hadn't heard before, but which I identify with very clearly, which was of adding one extra bedroom every decade. The problem with that, of course, is when you are valuing something that already exists, and particularly if it's already 20 years old, there comes a point when you can no longer sell those units anymore, that they are so old that nobody wants two-bedroom units anymore, and that's a real problem. Or it doesn't have the appropriate wheelchair access or whatever it might be. So my message, my fear is that it's all very well being actuaries and thinking we can group the data and value things, but I've been pleased you've been able to get beyond this the problems of the individuals, because the problems of the individuals have affected me very badly, that no matter what assumptions I made, we all know our assumptions are going to be wrong, but my assumptions have been proven to be wrong in a very short period.
I'm not sure if that's a question or a statement. Some are questions, some are statements. I guess the law of large numbers comes in, and as the industry concentrates in the hands of the corporates, the impact of the 100-year-old driver, while it might be bad for the pedestrian he hits, is not going to be so bad for the manager of the village. The problem of adding bedrooms and therefore the two bedrooms no longer being sufficient, yeah, that's a big problem that the industry has, and has to be reflected. Well, firstly, you can reflect that in your discount rate because you're looking at an aged village. Secondly, is reflected in the prices that, or the reallocation prices that you might assume. And the problem of real estate agents selling, yes, that's a problem in the industry too, because of the prescriptive nature of the various retirement villages acts and the cooling off periods. And in fact, there is now, as well as a cooling off period, there is now contemplated in one jurisdiction a try before you buy. So you decide, you've got 2 weeks to make up your mind you didn't want to do that, and then you've got 3 months to do it and make up your mind you didn't want to do it. So the industry is obviously not wanting that to go nationwide, but it is a different thing to sell.
Thank you, Dennis, for your insights. Are there any other questions?
Okay. Yep. Dennis, from a consumer perspective, what potential damages are there in the current regime? Because if the profession's going to get involved, then it may be from a consumer protection perspective.
One of the consumer problems is people sometimes don't get, the units don't resell, and the governments have generally addressed that by mandating that the manager pays people out. The main consumer problem would be a village collapses, and if a village collapses, then nobody comes up smelling well out of that, and the actuarial role in that would be to be identifying to the management what the value is, and the fact that the value can be seen to be declining, the fact that you have got insufficient maintenance is really where it will come. It needs care.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I'd just like to thank Dennis for his paper. and generating some additional thoughts within the profession. Perhaps this is for you. And as a special thanks, we have a bottle of wine here. So if you can put your hands together.